You're listening to the show that can help you with your sleep. It's The Sleep Show on the Talk of Connecticut with Dr. Bethany Brenner from Burlington Dental in Burlington, Connecticut. Dr. Brenner was selected as a top dentist by the Connecticut Magazine, recognized by Continental Who's Who as a top dentist for Connecticut for her role as an owner and dentist at Bethany B. Brenner, DMD, LLC, and for her outstanding of obtaining her mastership in Disclusion Time Reduction, DTR. She is the fourth person in the world to receive this title. But this show is about your sleep. If you have any issues sleeping with restless nights, as anyone knows who doesn't get the proper night's sleep, it throws off your whole day and your overall health. You can always get in touch with Dr. Bethany Brenner by emailing drbrennerradio@gmail.com or by calling 860-673-7155. That's 860-673-7155. You can also visit burlingtondentist.com. Now, Dr. Brenner. Good Saturday morning to you and welcome to The Sleep Show alongside Dr. Bethany Brenner. I'm Gary Byron. You can find out a ton of information on this subject, not only about what we're going to discuss this morning, but also some of the topics that we've discussed in past episodes. Head on over to theburlingtondentist.com. It's very simple. Theburlingtondentist.com. You know what else is simple? Their phone number. Ready? 860-673-7155. 860-673-7155. And by the way, you can email the show. You can email Dr. Bethany Brenner about anything that you hear on the show. And in fact, if you've got a question, don't be afraid to ask it. You can certainly send that question to Dr. Brenner Radio, B-R-E-N-N-E-R, drbrennerradio@gmail.com. And if you missed any of these points of contact, no worries. I'll give them to you at least a couple more times before the show is over. Doc, great to see you this morning.
You too.
Oh my goodness! We survived that that snow. I was with you last Saturday morning, and the snow came
Sunday.
Yeah, just a few hours later.
Yeah,
crazy.
We're all trying to get ready to be prepared to be snowed in.
Right.
Yeah. Luckily, we didn't. I didn't lose power, but I know some people did.
I thought it was terrible.
Well, certainly it was a lot of snow.
I'm not a winter person.
Well, you know. Winter is, I think it's fun to watch it snow. I just had a blast watching it snow, and I filled up my bird feeders on Saturday so I could watch the birds come and go and feel like I fed them, and they were all happy. So I do, I think it's peaceful.
I thought the birds fly south.
Not all of them.
No, I know.
Not all of them.
I wouldn't want to
be a bird surprised right was now. I had a pileated woodpecker that he was coming and going, and I was wow. I know they like suet, so they were going after the black-oiled sunflower seeds. It's like spit out all the other ones till they got to one of those seeds. It was fun to watch. Anyway, yeah, they're good.
My old house. Oh my goodness! The second you said the woodpecker, I just flashed back. This woodpecker every morning, real early. You know, Celeste, I got to get up early during the during the week. I like to sleep in a little bit on the weekends. Actually, although I don't sleep in much, maybe an hour and a half. But hey, an hour and a half, and yeah, with a little sleep that I get during the week, I'll take. But then in the summer, and I would go out and have a cup of coffee and read the paper, read my book out on my back deck, and I'd see it. You.
Yeah. I think they see their reflection sometimes in the gutters, and you wonder what it is that they have for a gutter. I know. They're funny, though.
We talk sleep apnea. I hear sleep apnea in children is most common between the ages of 2 and 8. What do you have? I know you've got a lot of info on this.
Well, this is when we start to notice it, right? And what disturbs me is that the pediatricians really aren't looking at sleep apnea. They're looking at the symptoms of it. And so one of the symptoms is, getting enlarged tonsils. And so why do the tonsils get enlarged? It's because the kids can't breathe through their nose, so they open their mouth. And anytime we open the mouth and mouth breathe, the tonsils get larger in children. And then the adenoids are irritated. And it's really interesting how when they do that, they take out both. And they don't ever test them for sleep apnea. And that might work for about 3 months. And after 3 months, after you take out tonsils and adenoids, yes, the tonsils can't swell up because they're not there anymore. But they still have sleep apnea.
Do you have to request that? Like, if you ask, can you test for sleep apnea?
Well, so interestingly, within the last week, I had a call from a father in New Jersey. And he said, oh, I read one of your articles. He said, you describe my son perfectly. And I said, what's going on? And he's like, well, you know, he has the snoring that he does and he's restless in bed. Because kids, like, the covers are everywhere. They're at the foot of the bed. They're at the head of the bed. So we call that restless sleeping. And the other thing he was doing was bedwetting. Okay.
How old is he?
He's 7.
Oh.
Okay. Mm. So, right, you think most of that we get rid of. But that's one of the cardinal signs of sleep apnea in children. And so we talked further, and he's like, he's getting thrown out of school. He's only in first grade. And they won't let him go into second because he's like a bully. And that's another symptom that we get. So it's not always hyperactivity. Sometimes they get terrible anxiety. The kids become ultra shy, can't be around people, like want to hide behind their parents' legs, if you will. And you get the other ones that are going around and socking and hitting other kids. And he just has these terrible temper tantrums, so the father was saying. And I said, so we talked a little more. And I said, you need to get a sleep study. And I said, you're going to have to fight for that because the pediatricians don't want to do that. Now, it's not that they're unreasonable people. I just don't think they see it, and I don't think it's on their radar most of the time. So, you know, when parents tell me they can hear their children grinding their teeth from across the house, I'm like, they have an airway problem, right? So what do they think it's mostly about? They think it's mostly about allergies. Must be something in your house that they're allergic to. Mm-hmm. Right? Well, parents are like, we don't have any dogs and cats. And, you know, well, it could be dust mites. Well, you know, the parents are cleaning like crazy, washing, changing the sheets. I mean, they go nuts. It's still sleep apnea, but they're not testing for it. And I think that's the sad part because we can fix these kids before the age of 7. But after 7, a lot of the neural pathways are already established. So now we're dealing with a kid who's a bully. Can we do that with some behavior modification? Some psychologists working with kids and parents on, you know, some of that behavior modification. The answer is yes, but we're getting those neural pathways embedded and we keep reinforcing it. So I look at some of this because I see older children who are almost dysfunctional because they have such terrible anxiety. They get panic attacks and this kind of thing. And you think, why, how can that come from breathing? It all stems from the breathing. The ENTs, they only are really taught to take out tonsils and adenoids. And I have a nephew. He's 3 years old. He just had his tonsils and adenoids taken out a week ago.
What causes enlarged tonsils in kids?
That's the mouth breathing again.
That's
so we go back
all
to
mouth breathing.
So every time we talk about nasal stuff, right? Mm. I said to you, when you can't breathe through your nose, what are you going to do? Your body's going to do the reflex and open the mouth to breathe.
Of course.
All right. So I'll give you another example, and I know I've talked about this a long time ago. I had a patient. The mother had an allergy to peanuts. Not real bad. Her daughter, this child's older sister, was highly allergic to peanuts so badly that she had to carry an EpiPen. Okay?
Wow.
Right?
That's severe.
They're feeding the son peanut butter. Now, when I talk about this, there's some common sense here that I don't hear relayed by pediatricians. And this mother was of the ilk of, I give him peanut butter, he's not going to become allergic to the peanuts. Okay? It's like a desensitization thing.
Right. No, I understand the philosophy. I don't know if it's accurate, though.
Well, that's my problem. So when you're of the body of the mother and the mother has the severe allergy, you're of her tissues. I hate to say it like that, but genetically you're of her tissues. The father only donates a little DNA to this. You're not of his tissues. So when you carry this baby to term, they has more of you, the mother, in the child, right? And so he's eating this peanut butter. And his tonsils are having a reaction to the peanut butter. So his tonsils swelled up, right? So when I see this child and I start talking to him and I see these huge, and so the father called me because he's a patient of mine, been since he was a child, and he said, what can you do? And I said, first of all, get him off the peanut butter, okay? Second, I have a laser that I can actually treat these tonsils and shrink them down. So with a few treatments for him, we were able to shrink his tonsils about half size. And I said, can you postpone this surgery? So we were able to do that. We got him off the peanut butter. And pretty soon, no more ear infections, no more problems, no more enlarged tonsils. We got back to being more normal. Right. Now, you'd think that was a common sense, simple answer. Right?
Sure.
Okay. So here I have a nephew. My niece is highly allergic to peanuts. Okay. And so I called my brother and I said, tell your daughter, you know, she's the one with the EpiPen for the peanuts and her son is of her tissues and he's probably got alert. And so where are they giving him the peanut butter? At grandma's house. So they're making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches because grandma's not allergic to peanut butter and neither is grandpa. So they're giving him peanut butter. I said, get him off the peanut butter. You know, that he needs to get away from the allergen, okay? Even though he's not breaking out in our hives and he's not having this anaphylactic reaction, he still has a tendency in this direction, okay? Nope, they didn't take him off the peanut butter, so they've opted to take out his tonsils and adenoids. So he just had that done a week or so ago. So I can't fight Mother Nature.
No.
And as my niece said, well, they're the professionals. They should know. Okay, they don't know all of this. And you think some of this is, I think it's common sense, but not always. Not always.
What should parents be on the lookout for? Like, what are some of the symptoms that...
Well, snoring.
Well, no, that's an obvious one, but I mean, and you said that in the past. What else?
Yeah, so there's bedwetting.
Really? That's common with sleep apnea in kids?
Uh-huh. Very common. I had a man who was 32, 33 years old. And he said, I bedwet until I was 19 years old. And he said, I never did any sleepovers. I was embarrassed. Right?
Yeah.
Right. So, and he lived with that even into college. And so he was like, I couldn't control it. Nobody knew what to do. Right?
And what did his mom think of this?
I don't know. He didn't talk about that. He just said, can, and he had sleep apnea. I tested him and he had sleep apnea.
Poor,
so, you know, when I do all this workup, because I have to screen people to go to the physician to say, you know, okay, that we do the sleep test. And they always look at my clinical notes. And I do what they do. So it's they go, yeah, do the test. Well, he had sleep apnea, and we talked about what to do for him. And then he was like, I'm on board. Let's do this. And he got a new job in Colorado. And he's like, do you know anybody in Colorado? And I said, yeah, I actually do. Where are you in Colorado? So, and I know somebody in Boulder Springs. So it was one of those things where I can drive to Boulder Springs. I'm not that far away. Great guy. Wonderful personality. So I made sure he got connected. There are people that go through such emotional tortures as adults or young adults.
Sure. I can only imagine.
Right. Oh. And the embarrassment, right? And now are you dating? You know, it's kind of like all of this funny stuff that happens to you. And so he wasn't married. He didn't have any girlfriends, you know, and it's
you feel for the guy.
Right. You feel for the guy. Right. So for him, and so when I do this check on the children, I'm asking parents certain questions. I recently had an 8.5-year-old in. And the mother goes, well, I'm bringing him here because I think he's tongue-tied. Okay. That's right. So I look. Yeah, he's tongue-tied. And so she had an orthodontic consult.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, yeah, we'll wait to see how he, you know, how his teeth come in. So they're going to wait, 3, 4, 5 years before they treat his orthodontic condition. I'm just giving you, this is very common, very common. And
wow.
So I said to her, he has enough signs of sleep apnea. We'll see if we can do a test. So we did the test. We facilitated that. He had severe sleep apnea. He was very strongly ADHD. Can't sit still. Very hyperactive. Can't pay attention in school. Nice kid. Really nice, smart. A lot of them are very intelligent. So it has nothing to do with that. But if they can't stay focused, then they don't tend to get great grades. Some do. So it's the spectrum again of where are you? Are you a little bit mildly this way or are you at the other end of the spectrum and pretty bad?
I can only imagine a parent listening to this and maybe you're causing alarm. Maybe you're sparking genuine interest in this issue with their own children. What would you tell these parents as far as when a sleep study should be performed on their kids? Should,
well, it's about paying attention.
It's about age, or is it about at what stage?
So I like to see that we can get them fixed before the age of 7.
Okay.
So we want to try to open that airway up and get them some treatment so that by age 7, they're breathing more normally. and that we're seeing that that's reduced. Because one sleep apneic event in a child is serious, okay, because it oxygen deprives them. So now we're trying to build a brain that's growing very rapidly in childhood, and we're not giving it all the oxygen it needs while they're sleeping, okay? So that's a concern for me. So you wonder why we see these kids, some of them struggle in school. They have learning issues, and you kind of, I don't want to say we're handicapping them, but a little bit. We also see sometimes the cervical spine. We start to see the forward head posturing. These are all little signs and symptoms that I look for. We look to see if the parents can acknowledge they have trouble going to sleep or they have trouble waking up in the morning for school. What is their behavior like? We talk about food because I know that the chemicals in the processed foods affect behavior. So are we dealing with that or are we dealing with sleep apnea? Right. So we're looking at all these things. Once we figure out that they probably should do a sleep test, one of the things that I find is that the parents then go, now what? Right. What are our choices? OK. So I try to avoid the surgeries. And very interestingly, there is some new data that's coming out. Believe it or not, I'm using clear aligners on young children. You think 4 or 5 years old.
Yeah.
We're putting these clear aligners in while they're sleeping. This is not during the day. So very similar to an adult, we put attachments on their baby teeth, and then they wear these aligners while they're sleeping. Now, that's if I can get them at a young age.
I was right about the okay, go ahead. I don't want to interrupt you, but that's what I was thinking.
So what are we doing? We're expanding their palate without a painful palatal expander, okay, because that's what a lot of choices are out there, is a painful palatal expander. We're now expanding them, and we're doing it in 3D. So we have the cone beam x-ray, so we can see them in 3D. I do a 3D scan on their teeth, and we overlay them, and I use this particular company who is really about airway breathing and changing kids' lives by doing this, okay? The studies are showing that when we expand them before the age of 6 and 7, that their teeth now start to come in more normally. We don't see as many crooked teeth, right?
Good.
We're making the appropriate spacing. We've opened up their airway because they're so easy to open up when they're that little. All of a sudden, these kids don't have sleep apnea anymore. We watch them develop. Now, they'll wear this at night for a little while. We may have to change a few things. But once they're stable, we can let them see, kind of take everything off and let them see how they go. And we're seeing this amazing transformation of these kids. Their IQ goes up. Their schoolwork gets better. They become pleasant, just delightful young ladies and gentlemen. And it's, for me, I don't want to say we fixed them, but we've certainly given them a better path to go on.
And that's what it's about. Folks, you are listening to The Sleep Show alongside Dr. Bethany Brenner. I'm Gary Byron. Of course, you can find her online at the Burlington Dentist. She is a dentist. She said this many times. She's not a sleep doctor. Right. She doesn't want to, any confusion there. But you can find her at theburlingtondentist.com, and you can call her to schedule a consultation for sleep, for dentist, for everything. You actually even, was it a week or two ago, you were talking nutrition. I spent the whole show talking on nutrition.
Right.
I know that's of great interest to you. Here, let me give you the number, 860-673-7155. Again, it's 860-673-7155. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to give you these points of contact one more time or towards the end of the show. I'll throw in an email address as well. You're talking about how many different treatment options do people have for this? And what are some? I mean, you've given...
Well, one of the things depends on how the child presents. So what are the particular problems, all right? So sleep apnea can also lead to obesity, all right? So what happens when we see that? So this is another reason why I talk to parents about the choice of foods. And a lot of people, they read the package and says, oh, all healthy on the front. And you turn it over and read the label. And you're like, okay, this is not exactly what we want to do, right?
Yeah, done that.
But there are people that do not know this. They clearly don't know how to read labels and they don't understand. They just read the advertising on the front of the package. So people grow up eating the wrong foods. That's their standard fare for food. And that's how they bring their children up. So why do people love, if you think about it, people from India love the foods that they eat, right? Some people come from places that have spicier foods. They love their spicy food, right? And they grow up with that. So that's a comfort food for them because they had love and attention and holidays. And So then you get somebody like me, and I can't do spicy food. It does not agree with me. So for me, I'm looking for the comfort foods that I had around our holidays.
Sure.
Right? So everybody comes to their food choices usually through history and how they've grown up. But now you have somebody like me who's going, yeah, when I drink the milk, I don't feel so good. Right? And I didn't understand why. But I had had strep throat when I was 11 years old, and they gave me massive doses of penicillin. That was a new drug back then because tonsillitis.
And that was a cure-all, too.
Tonsillitis could lead to a more severe strep infection, which could lead to scarlet fever. And scarlet fever damaged your heart. Okay? So there were people who died of scarlet fever. There were people who got heart murmurs because of scarlet fever. And so you look at why did they do that? Well, because they're trying to save you from having scarlet fever. So that was a pretty serious thing back in the 30s, 40s, 50s, okay? And people died of it. They would be sick for months and months trying to get rid of this infection. So, yes, we've got great antibiotics, but when you give it in mega doses, what it does is it screws up your gut microbiome. And so we now start to understand we live in a symbiotic relationship with the bacteria in our gut and how we respond to food. So did that create a problem with dairy? Well, my mother was really big on giving us a big glass of milk with every meal and drink your milk because that was good for you, right? Now, she's not wrong if we were drinking whole milk, but in my case, milk made me feel sick. I did not feel good drinking milk, so I began to resist drinking the milk. I could eat yogurt and not have a problem, but I couldn't drink the milk.
How about ice cream?
Yeah, I could have ice cream too, but I didn't have it in large quantity. So as I got into my early teen years, I started going, when my mother was big on going to the library, I would gravitate over into the magazines and I'd find this nutrition magazine. And then she'd come to grab me and say, we're leaving now, and I'd be into the depth of this magazine, which you are not allowed to check out because you had to sit there and read it. So I started reading nutritional stuff by the time I was 13, 14 years old. So I had an issue with certain foods and I couldn't figure out why. And that got progressively worse, and we, you know, still I'm looking for answers for myself, but I wasn't the only one that had the problem. And so I was still really ahead of my time in understanding nutrition. And when I got to dental school, I was like, how come there's no nutrition course here? Okay. So it's things like that. So for me, there's always been a fascination between biochemistry. I was the microbiologist in college. Like, I did a lot of, you know, that kind of research in understanding how we have this. And it really helped out with dentistry because I understand how the bacteria work in the mouth. Interestingly, mouth breathing leads to lots of cavities. So when I see these kids come in and they have lots of cavities, I'm looking at airway. I'm looking for what is the root cause of the cavities. It's the same in adults when I start to see periodontal disease. So I gave a lecture. This was a few years ago. And there was a couple of periodontists in the room. Now, they treat gum disease, right? Mm-hmm. And I had about 12 to 15 articles on periodontal disease and its association with sleep apnea. So what do they should be looking for when they're treating these patients is sleep apnea. Are they doing that? The answer is no. Very few. There are some that know. I got some great emails from individuals who heard the lecture, who read my articles, and they go, absolutely, they know about this connection. But there are others that do not know that there's a connection. So some of the dentists don't know. And, you know, you have to remember, not everybody comes in having a science background like I had.
What if you just sleep with your mouth open? But you don't necessarily snore. You may drool, but...
So that's still mouth breathing, okay?
Yeah.
So mouth breathing dries out the tissues in the mouth, and so they will have sleep apnea. They may not have it immediately, but typically, yeah. So that when the mouth gets dry, and I do a particular test in my office, and I can tell whether they have dry mouth. And I ask them the question, do you feel like you have a dry mouth? And a lot of them go, I don't know, or I don't think so. Yeah. And so I do the test, and yep, you've got dry mouth, okay? And then when I talk about you roll onto your back, because we all do it, right? We roll onto our back, our mouth opens, the jaw falls back. Now those tissues are very sticky because they're dry. So you want to think of like it gets tacky and it goes stick. And how long does it stay stuck for? That's when you know, obviously you and I are still here, so I'm sure we do it sometimes. But the point is that you overcome that sleep apneic moment. But people hold their breath, and I see this on these sleep tests, for anywhere from 45 to over a minute. I had one woman that held it for a minute and a half.
Wow.
Well, they're desaturating their oxygen down into the 70s, sometimes the 60s. And then I start to see this is where they're getting dementia. Okay. So, and we talked about it in one of the other shows a few weeks back about Parkinson's. So you have to remember that there, the reason I am so passionate about this subject matter is because I'm trying to prevent the future illnesses that come with sleep apnea. And I know that we're headed as we go into that. Remember last time we talked about parasympathetic, right? When you're in sympathetic, you start to get autoimmune issues. And what are those? Arthritis, chronic fibromyalgia, lupus, multiple sclerosis. We start to see IBS. We see certain, like Crohn's. We see diseases that get diagnosed with no known cause. But they're living in that world where they don't rebuild their body because the body can't repair when they're having these moments of disruption in deep sleep. They need the deep sleep to be able to function. I know it all connects. And when I talk about how complicated this subject matter is, it's like when you start to really get into the weeds of it, you go, one thing leads to the next thing leads to the next thing, right? So how do I stop it? I go back to childhood and I say, we need to fix the kids.
We need to fix the kids.
Yeah.
Let's start by fixing the parents, and then we can fix the kids. Folks, if you'd like more information on this topic or any of the others that we've discussed on this show, simply head on over to theburlingtondentist.com. Theburlingtondentist.com. It's that simple. If you've got a question, a comment, a concern, don't be shy here. So you can send it over to us. We can mention your name or not mention your name in town. But if you thought of it, I would imagine others have as well, and we should probably address it and get you the answer. You can send it to drbrennerradio@gmail.com. That's B-R-E-N-N-E-R, drbrennerradio@gmail.com. If you'd like to call and schedule a consultation, that's easy to do. Write this phone number down, and the show is nearly over. You can call right now, actually, 860-673-7155. One more time, 860-673-7155. For Dr. Bethany Brenner, I'm Gary Byron. Thank you so much for listening to The Sleep Show. Until next Saturday morning, have a good one, everybody. So long. You've been listening to the show that can help you with your sleep. It's The Sleep Show here on The Talk of Connecticut with Dr. Bethany Brenner from Burlington Dental in Burlington, Connecticut. If you have any issues sleeping with restless nights, as anyone knows who doesn't get the proper night's sleep, it throws off your whole day and your overall health. Listen to The Sleep Show every weekend at this time for a better night's sleep. You can always get in touch with Dr. Bethany Brenner by emailing drbrennerradio@gmail.com or by calling 860-673-7155. That's 860-673-7155 or visit theburlingtondentist.com.